He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
Good day to our listeners for this week's show of Car Keys, done sometime during the summer of 2025. And we have some topics that Jay and I are going to start out with, and Mike will be certainly invited to step in, as he sometimes loves to do, if he doesn't like what we say. But Jay, you entered a topic which I think we could start out with, which is what are our favorite car makers or makes of cars or however you want to put it? And why don't we start with you, and then I'll chime in with my list, and we can then blend our discussion after that. And if Mike doesn't drive a new car, so I don't know how we're going to get him to give us any real opinion, but we'll give him a chance, okay?
Well, Jay? You can always buy me a new car.
The radio station can do that.
So everybody knows I love Porsches, right? I mean, those of you who know me anyway, I don't know if it's my favorite brand. It is a particular brand that I like. And the reason I'd like to talk about it today is that over this weekend, I was at the track and there was a huge gathering of Porsches for the annual meet of the Connecticut Valley region's Porsche Club of America's chapter. And it's a cool day. I was there as a vendor, but I also brought my little contributing car to the event. And
tell us what it is, please.
It's a 2001 996 Porsche. So it's a 911. But every generation of 911 has a code name, and I still have never made sense of them. So you go from the current generation is a 992, the one before is a 991, but the one before is a 997. Then I'm backtracking to 996, 993, and so forth. So there is a logic in the German's mind somewhere, but it's sometimes hard to follow. Anyway, so, you know, Porsche is mostly known for its 911. I think it's the iconic model. It came out in 1964 and was really basically unchanged until 1998, 1999, when the 996 model came out. Until then, for, I don't know, 25, 30 years, the car was basically the same. And the layout is, you know, a rear engine car. It's a sports car, obviously. The origins of Porsche trace back to the Volkswagen Beetle. And of course, the history of Porsche and Dr. Ferdinand Porsche is a little darker, and because the brand, the company started during the Nazi era of Germany, and at that time, Dr. Porsche was just a consultant, or was not a manufacturer per se, but was commissioned by the German government at the time, the Nazi government, to develop a people's car, and we all know the Beetle, you know, the Beetle that came to our shores in the 1960s and the hype of the Beetle. And basically the first Porsche was a Beetle, and I still get teased, and as a lot of Porsche owners do, about driving a Volkswagen or a glorified Volkswagen, and so be it. Anyway, the event was really cool, a lot of show cars, a lot of very valuable cars, a lot of cars that I particularly like. And I can go on, but yes. The company is also at a crossroad. You know, again, the 996 Porsche, the model I own, is a car that came just in time to save Porsche from bankruptcy. So Porsche, over the decades, reinvented itself a few times. And of course, they are a very successful company today, mostly because a vast majority of the cars they sell are SUVs. and the first SUV Porsche came out was the Cayenne. The Cayenne, and it's been about 20 years. I think the Cayenne came out in 2004, and the Macan came out about 10 years later. The Macan is a small, slightly smaller SUV, and probably still for people who like to drive cars. The Macan is probably the most enjoyable SUV, midsize SUV out there. Anyway, I can go on and on and on, but I don't want to, hug. No.
Let's say that Porsche, you said Porsche was at a crossroads. I'd like to interject. Do you think it's because they're having a problem deciding where they really fit in the car world going forward between remaining fossil fuel engine producers and users, as opposed to trying to do the electric conversion, which they have not been too successful about, I think, in terms of sales. They may well be excellent driving vehicles, as all Porsches are, but I think that I see it, at least in my feeling, that it's they're having a real problem deciding whether electric is really going to sell a Porsche in the future, as opposed to retaining their heritage.
Yes, absolutely. It is probably what bit them, as is the case with other European and specifically German manufacturers. Mercedes, BMW are facing similar challenges. And I think a lot of that stems from the European mandate to go all electric by, I'm going to say, 2035. Porsche really committed they came out with the electric Taycan in, I'm going to say, 2020, 2021. And it's a great electric car, obviously very high end. I've driven one. I think it's great. You sit in the Taycan and it feels like you're driving a 911. They're low to the ground. When you look out the front windshield, look at the dashboard, it really feels like you're driving a 911. And arguably, it's faster. As we've discussed, electric cars are really, really fast. The Taycan is a great car, but it's also, it's an expensive car. So Porsche decided, as ICE engines were to be banned in Europe, post 2035, the Macan was to be the first pure electric-only model. So as of now, there is no longer a ICE Macan.
Really?
Correct. And the new electric Macan is great, but as we know, not everybody wants
selling.
Well, it really just came out, so I don't have any numbers, and it's probably hard to tell whether it's going to be a commercial success or not. I think it is, just because it's a great, but it's also gone up in price. I mean, now you're hovering just under $100,000 for a midsize SUV. I know all prices have gone up in most cars. We've discussed this before, but it's still a tough sell.
Let me interrupt you, because I want to stay on favorite car subjects before we go off
absolutely.
On the side things. And
go ahead.
You've covered Porsche very well. And but one question before we move to my list, what is the least expensive Porsche that you know of that you can buy? Anybody can buy if they can afford a Porsche level car.
Okay, mine.
That's not to get away from the favorite car list.
No.
It's
a great question, because obviously they've become collector items. The older Porsches, prices have gone through the roof. If you get an old air-cooled 911, in good condition or restored, they go, $100,000, $150,000. They're getting to be very, very expensive. The first water-cooled 911, the one I actually own, that came out in 1998, is probably the least expensive 911 you can buy. And if they have high miles, you can get there really no more money than a used Subaru, is what I always define that.
I wanted to limit it to new vehicle pricing. I know the used vehicles.
I'm talking about brands, new vehicles is fine, but
I understand that. Go ahead.
But the whole idea of, you know, liking a brand and collecting cars, or having a, you know, there's a whole thing about collecting older cars, and
right.
But in the new cars, you know, you most Porsches are all in the you know, over $100,000, and go way okay. up from there.
Okay, all right.
So obviously right. not for everybody.
Okay, so let's go to my list. I have five brands.
Five.
On my list to start out. Well, yes, because as we have said on this show, listeners, all the cars that are made today are generally excellent overall mechanical devices or operational devices. So it really comes down to, in my view, the looks of the cars. And here we go. Not necessarily in the top 1 to 5 order. The first one I'm going to mention is, I think, Mazda. Mazda puts out, I believe, a very good line of cars. They had a moniker about how drivable they were, but I like their designs. They're a bit slow getting into the electric world or the hybrid world, but their vehicles, CX-5, I don't know the model number is 5, and the CX-50 and all the way up, I think are overall a very fine group of cars if you like Mazdas. My second one for discussion, because I own three of them and I'm responsible for 4 in my family, are Jeeps. I'm going to narrow my favorite Jeep to the Cherokee. It's not for everybody because of its size. It's not the biggest vehicle for family use and all that. But I have experience with ownership of 3, and they have been wonderful driving vehicles. I recently talked to somebody who acquired a used Jeep Cherokee, and this is a woman who I didn't know was interested in letting me know that she was interested in how a car drove, but she says this is the best car she's ever driven. I have felt that way. I'm not going to go on and on. So Jeep is my second of the 5 in this list of favorite car makers. Audi. I was a great fan of Audi back in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and probably have, or by that time, had owned a half a dozen of the different models, ranging from, or my family, from the Audi 100s back in the, I don't know, that was the 70s, maybe, Jay, to the 5000s, to everything, to the A8s. A7s. I am back in Audi land in new territory, being responsible for 2021 pre-owned certified used Audis. One is an A5 Cabriolet. The other is recently acquired by my wife, Q5 plug-in hybrid. I think Audi is producing a very fine vehicle. They all have, but I was out of them from about 2004, which is my oldest and still owned Audi A8, to the 2021 acquisitions.
That's a great car, by the way.
Yeah. Toyota, I think they produce a very fine line of cars. They are about the smartest manufacturer in this transition era of going from fossil fuel to through the hybrid lines to electrics. I don't think they have an all-electric car yet. But Toyota, I like their designs. I think their cars look well. They drive well. They last forever. We've got a Highlander in my family. It's got 235,000 miles. It's a Highlander 2014 hybrid. And it has had wheel bearing replacements only, along with brakes and tires over its entire 235,000 mile life. So durability of Toyota, I think, is almost legendary. You know, that used to be applied to Volvos. There used to be Volvos in the last century era that went 1 million miles and more.
So what's number 5?
Number 5 is Hyundai. Of the Kia Hyundai manufacturer, I like the Hyundai line of vehicles more than the Kia line. I think they produce a very fine car. I have a 2013 Sonata hybrid, which I will not trade in because I don't like the newer looks of the newer model lines of the Hyundai Sonatas. I've got 135,000 miles on it. It has given me no problems. I've had no replacements of anything during that time, but I like the looks of it. And I do not like the looks of the new Sonata lines, but I think their larger SUV vehicles are very fine. And that is the end of my list. And it's my opinion only, listeners, but there you have it.
So I was, you know, when I brought up Porsche, and I was, you know, mentioning this because I had been to this event over the weekend, I was thinking more as you know, in terms of, you know, cars we like for, you know, as collector's items and or sports cars. And I think in you know, yes, Toyota is a great car. There are a few that are memorable as far as, you know, people wanting to drive them as you know, as a sports car, collector's item. But they are probably, like you said, they're legendary as far as reliability is concerned.
Jay, when you proposed this topic before we got on the air for our listeners, I took a different tack, of course, as you can hear, as the listeners heard, in what I came up with for favorite cars. I agree with your feelings about the Porsche line of cars. I never owned one, but they are indeed everything you said they were for our listeners.
Okay. So I wanted to come up. It brought me to something else I was thinking about is, you know, when we're looking for used cars, we're usually thinking mm-hmm. about finding cars with low miles, you know, just to get them as new as possible. And for instance, my experience with my Porsche, which I bought with 168,000 miles, and that was the reason that it was so affordable. You know, sometimes buying a car with high miles that's been well maintained is a much better value proposition. And even looking for, you know, everyday cars, if you buy a car with high miles that has been well maintained, and usually it shows, if a car drives well and it's got 150,000 miles, well, usually it has been well maintained. It has new brakes, it has new tires, it has new shocks. And so you can get some pretty good deals on cars with higher miles. Also, in the case of collecting collector items, you know, if you buy a high miles car and you want to actually drive it like it's meant to be, then you're not going to take the depreciation hit that you would in buying a lower mileage car. And that's just a thought on, you know, low versus high mileage cars.
I'd like to chime in for our listeners' benefit on this topic of buying used cars. Q5 Audi that my wife acquired, it was a pre-owned off-lease vehicle, and this is a good way to find low mileage cars. Leases, I have leased a few cars in my life, but every time I've leased a vehicle, I've only leased it for 3 years, which is generally included 36,000 miles of mileage before you start paying for over mileage if you put more miles on by the end of the 3 year term or during the 3 year term before it ends. I will say it went on the used car market I could have purchased the vehicle. It was a Jeep Cherokee, actually, the last car I ever leased. And it had a buyout value of $18,000. It was a $32,000 list sticker price level vehicle when I acquired it in 2019, I think it was. And I did not happen to buy it out of the lease, but I found it went into auction and I found the car, ended up in Texas where it was for sale for $26,000 with no significant additional miles other than maybe being put on tow trucks or travel trucks to disappear to auction houses and there from there down to where they ended up being for sale. But you get back to buying used vehicles, you go talk about low mileage. The best way to get, I think, low mileage or look at low mileage cars is to look at cars that are coming off 3 year leases, listeners, from the dealers or from the manufacturers, and it end up in any number of places available for purchase. But the 2021 Q5, we were able to acquire, it had 29,000 miles on it. And it was, I believe, around, 39,000 miles, I found out. But it was like $39,000, I believe, was it? When the list price, the sticker, which came with the vehicle, was a $56,000 at new in 2021. And so it had 39,000 miles on it. We put an extended warranty on it to, I believe, 80 or 100,000 miles, just in case something goes wrong between our mileage and that extended warranty mileage. That cost us, I believe, approximately $2,700 additional to the price we paid for the vehicle. But I think it'll be well worth it if something goes wrong, because as we've said on this show, the European cars, once they're out of warranty, can be much more pricey to repair than the domestically produced vehicles in the United States, the Fords, the Stellantis, formerly Chrysler, Plymouth, and all that, and General Motors with GMC and Chevrolet branded vehicles. I left Ford out. I have on my notepad for this show, why did I not pick Ford? I think Ford puts a pretty good vehicle out. We'd say all the vehicles are actually excellent these days. The word I use for my leaving it off is I have a feeling it's sort of got a bland overall visual look to many of its vehicles. The vehicle lines I chose all are certainly to me more noticeable coming down the road from a distance before you get close enough to see what they really are.
Have you seen the new Mustang GT? The new Mustang?
Yes.
The one that broke the record at Nürburgring.
I haven't seen one live. Have you seen one live?
No. And okay. I think it'll be a while, but
let me tell the listeners what I think. I think Mustang, I have a Mustang in my fleet. It's a 95 and it's the old look. The newer look is much sleeker, of course. I sat in one at the auto show, and what I didn't like about the interior was the interior dashboard. I do not know what they really look like on the road, but I mean, the cars look all right on the road, but I did not like the dashboard configuration that I saw on the one. And it was, you know, touchscreen and all this stuff that I'm not particularly interested in seeing going forward in my car ownership situation.
Well, I guess
I left Ford off that list of favorite car makers in my list. Listeners, but they are overall good cars.
Yeah, like we said before.
I'd like to talk about the stop-start technology on cars, because it's getting a lot of notoriety in terms of press, and apparently it's a very hot and cold item that people either certainly like, I'm one, and more mostly hate. I think a lot more people have determined that they do not like the start-start technology in cars. Basically, for listeners who don't have that on their cars, it's now available on many of the lines. I think mostly standard is, and it's available incidentally in Europe. It's available in manual transmission vehicles.
I own one.
Now, we don't have enough manual transmission vehicles in this country to talk about that. But what you do is when you come to a stoplight or a stop sign, if you hold your foot on the brake long enough and the batteries are charged up properly, the engine will stop completely while you're at a stop condition and start up the minute you take your foot off the brake pedal.
I hate it. I really hate it.
Okay, there we go, Mike. You can come in and say why you hate it, because you're not alone.
I hate it because I think it's totally ridiculous. It's you have to wait for your car to start up again. I really question if it's good for a starter having this happen all the time. And, you know, it delays
all the points that people are worried about.
It delays traffic and such, you know. And until I actually was driving one of these things, I often wondered why people in front of me were sitting there for, 4 or 5, 6 seconds, 10 seconds before they got moving.
Okay,
now I know why.
Now I know.
I think you're mixing things, Mike.
Yeah, Mike, you're mixing it up with something else.
but people waiting 3 to 10 seconds when the light goes green
are on their phone.
Has nothing to do with the stop-start
that's right.
feature.
It has all to do with distraction from the light being green.
We're going from one rant to another now.
That's right. This is going to be the rant session of this show.
But
I blame it on that start thing still. So
go ahead, Jay. Chime in. Get Mike off the mic.
I have mixed feelings, and having driven a bunch of cars, some actually work better than others. And but I can tell you, I do have a standard in Europe with the feature, and you have to keep the clutch, you know, totally in. Now, if I'm at a stoplight and I'm waiting and I put the car in gear and I'm holding the clutch in. No, actually, how does it work? Now, you got me thinking.
I'm not sure how it works on a standard shift transmission. It was on ours and it worked, but I don't know how I was making it work.
You have to be in neutral and the clutch released. As soon as you dip the clutch in, whether you're in neutral or in gear, the engine turns on.
Good grief.
We're not going to have to worry about that in the U.S.
In the standard, it actually works pretty well.
First off, most people don't drive a standard, so that's, you know, kind of...
don't have standards for them to drive.
And then the automatic, it's a pain in the you-know-what.
Well, you know...
I don't think it is a pain at all. I think it is a little disconcerting when the car restarts. There's a level of vibration as the starter motor gets the engine going, but it is very quick. It is not 3 to 10 seconds, as Mike was delivering.
Yeah,
listeners. That is another problem
of
distraction.
We
can discuss later. It does work very well, except I don't like it because if I'm at a stop sign and I want to go left and I turn the wheel to the left, the engine starts in my stop-start car, but I'm not ready to move yet. That, I think, can be improved.
If you take your foot
off the brake pedal just for a reason, if it slips off the brake pedal, the engine starts even if you're not ready to move forward yet. And it does not restart when you put it back on in the cars that I have it on.
So, Mike,
there are little things like that that are annoying, but overall, the industry or the general thing is the general technology benefit is that it saves probably too little amount of gas to really make people really want it.
It preserves like a drop of gas. Actually, it should cost more gas because you're restarting. It takes more gas to get started
old.
Again.
Well,
so
that's another carburetor versus technology. Well,
there you go.
Fuel injection.
And sometimes I've had the stupid thing happen when I'm going to park the car. I put my foot on the brake at the end of the parking space, and all of a sudden it shuts down. And then when I let my foot off after I put it in park, it starts back up again. How stupid is that? Yeah.
Mike.
That's stupid, Mike.
We're not. I want to finish on this.
Now that I've stirred this pot up.
I want to give Mike a few pieces of advice. One, just keep shaking your wheel, you know, like a little old person. You just shake your wheel as you're standing still. And it'll stay running. Or use your left foot on the brake and a little bit of gas, just a little bit on the gas pedal.
I shouldn't have to put that much effort into stopping the car.
Go through the menu on the car, because I'm sure there's a way to turn off that feature. Because on 99% of cars, that feature can be turned off. So you've got a little homework to do there, Mike.
Well, this is a good, for our listeners, this is the humor section of our show. This may be continued off the air when we're finished. You're finished listening to us, because but the proof in this discussion is that there is a lot of similar opinions of many people, probably more on Mike's side than on my side, but it's here to stay, probably.
Well, you may be right.
Well,
now wait a minute. When I put my foot down now on that brake. For this show.
That break for the show?
We're about done here today.
Okay, well, I hope our listeners enjoyed this version of Car Keys with Mike, Robin, and Jay. We will be back for another show next week.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.